Jayaratamadhava Jayakunjavihari Jayaratamadhava Jayakunjavihari Gopichana Ballapa Jaya Giri Varunare Jaya Giri Varunare Gopichana Malabak Jaya Giri Varunare Jaya Giri Varunare Yasoda Nandana Jaya Bracha Janaranjana Yasoda Nandana Jaya Bracha Janaranjana Yamuna Tira Banachari Nayo Kunjaviyari Jaya Kunjaviyare Yamuna Tira Banachari Kunjaviyare Kunjaviyare Jaya Radha Jaya Giri Varunare Giri Varunare Vichara Balapa Jaya Giri Varunare Giri Varunare Yasoda Nandana Jaya Kuncha Janaranjana Yasoda Nandana Jaya Kuncha Janaranjana Yamuna Tira Banachari Naya Kuncha Viyari Jaya Kuncha Munatira Manachari Naya Kunjaviyari Jaya Kunjaviyari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunjaviyari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunjaviyari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paramahacharya Also Tara Siddhishi Shimad His Divine Grace Abhaya Charanad Bhaktivananda Goswami Srila Prabhupad Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupad Ki Jai Anantakoti Vaishnav Vrindagajai, Namacharya Shidohira Stakur Gajai, Rem Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Parabhu Nichananda Shidwaita Gadadha, Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrindagajai, Shri Shri Radhakrishna, Gopi Gopinath Shayam Kun Radhakunda Giri, Govardhan Gajai, Vrindavanam Gajai, Maturidam Kajai, Jagadathasami Kajai, Yamunamai Kajai, Shimati Lasi Devi Kajai, Samaveda Bhakta, Vrindi Kajai, Gaur Premananda Haribol. All glory is the assembled devotees, all glory is the assembled devotees, all glory is the assembled devotees, all glory is to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nirvashesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deja Tarane. So Om Magana Timidandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshurun Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Jai Prabhupada. So we're going to continue with our study of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. We are on... We are on the seventh chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Leela. And we are reading right now about a bunch of philosophy. And this philosophy has to do with Shankaracharya's philosophy and our philosophy and how our philosophy is better than Shankaracharya's philosophy. Why is it better than Shankaracharya's philosophy? Because Shankaracharya was sent down by Krishna. He's considered an incarnation of Lord Shiva to bewilder people, to give them a bogus philosophy, so that he would be able to bring the Buddhists back to the Vedic literatures and basically kick them all out of India. Because the Buddhists, at that point, were preaching something that was more or less a nihilistic philosophy. You know, voidism, shunyavadi, like we say in the prayers of the Prabhupada, Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharani Nirashesha Shunyavadi Paschachate Chitarani, that the Western worlds are full of impersonalism and voidism. Everything is zero, or everything is just atoms. That's another branch of Buddhism where they think everything is just atoms. Of course, it's very similar to the Vedic conception of Vaisheshikism. I can coin a word, Vaisheshika philosophy. So, anyway, so let us go ahead, and there's going to be some philosophy, and I'm trying to make it as interesante as possible, that's possible, for you. So, I know philosophy, anyway, it's sometimes a little hard to digest. So let's share the screen. Without further ado, Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktivinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktivinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Okay. And if anyone has any really good questions, ask. You can raise your hand in the participant window as we are reading, and I will answer at my discretion. Excuse me. And then, what else was I mentioning? Yeah. If my sound happens to go out, just let me know and I'll switch microphones because the batteries on one of my wireless microphones is running out. Okay, so now we're going to start talking about Parinamabada again. Okay. Text 123. Yeah, that's the one we're starting on. Vastuta parinama vada se se pramana dehe dehe atma buddhi Evi Vartera Stana. You should be able to recognize a lot of the words in this verse. You know, Parinama, which means transformation. Pramana means evidence. Dehi means body. Ava means the self. Bhuti means intelligence. And Vivarta means illusion. Establish Stana. Should be established or place. Okay. Let's go. Transformation of energy is a proven fact. It is the false bodily conception of the self that is an illusion. So here is being presented by Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami, who is repeating the words of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that we believe in the Shakti Parinama Vad. That means, Shakti means the energy of the Lord. Parinama means transformation. So that is our philosophy, not Brahma Parinama Vad. And also, we believe in Jiva Vivarta. Vivarta Vad in terms of the Jiva, that the Jiva is an illusion. And so Prabhupada explains here, the jiva, or living entity, is a spiritual spark who is part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unfortunately, he thinks the body to be the self, and that is that misunderstanding is called vivarta, or acceptance of untruth to be truth. The body is not the self, but animals and foolish people think that it is. Vivarta, illusion, does not, however, denote a change in the identity of the spirit soul. It is the misconception that the body is the self that is an illusion. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead does not change when his external energy, consisting of the eight gross and subtle material elements listed in the Bhagavad Gita, when his, etc., acts and reacts in different phases. Of course, Bhumi, Rupo, Analo, Vayu, come to know. Bhagavad Gita 7th chapter, text 4. So the energy gets transformed. Very simple, we covered this before. But God does not get transformed. The soul does not get transformed. The energy of the Lord, specifically the material energy, gets transformed. But we are not transformed. We are in illusion. That's called vivarta. So remember those terms. Vivarta, Parinam, transformation. Those two. Remember them. And Jiva, that's us. Avichincha Shakti Yukta Sri Bhagavan Ichaya Jagadurupe Paya Parinama. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is opulent in all respects. Therefore, by his inconceivable energies, he has transformed the material cosmic manifestation. And how does he transform it? Nobody knows. By his two things. By his will and by his glance. Saikshita. Because Krishna is apta kama. What does that mean? That means he gets what he wants when he wants it. It's like him having Aladdin's lamp. Of course, he doesn't even need to rub the lamp. He doesn't even need to ask the genie. For those of you who don't know what Aladdin's lamp is, once upon a time, there was a guy who discovered a lamp. He rubbed the lamp, and a genie, that means bogus god, no, a mystic yogi popped out of the lamp, and he said, "Your wish is my desire." And the guy who asked for the wish, his name was Aladdin, whatever. I don't know how you pronounce the Sanskrit of that word. But anyway, it was Aladdin, and he asked for some wishes. Of course, there were some strings attached to those wishes, but we're not going to, or the fulfillment of the wishes. So in any case, Krishna, he just wants something and it happens. Why? Parashya Shakti Vibhidaiva Shuryate Svabhavaki Jnana Valakriyacha. Krishna has all these energies that'll do whatever he wants, and they know what he wants, and they give him what he wants. They're first-class servants. That's wonderful. So therefore, Krishna is able to transform this just by willing it to happen or by looking at it. It's aikshita. Tatapi achintya shakti paya avikara kari, sorry. Prakrita chintamani tahe drishyantat ye dari. Using the example of a touchstone which by its energy turns iron to gold and yet remains the same, we can understand that although the Supreme Personality of Godhead transforms his innumerable energies, he remains unchanged. That's what a touchstone is. You just touch it, like the Midas touch story. And something turns to gold and remains the same. Wow. And of course, we quoted from the Asopanishad about this a million times before, so we're not going to quote again. Nano ratna rakshi haya chintamani hoite tatapiha mani rahe swarupe avikrite. Although a touchstone produces many varieties of valuable jewels, it nevertheless remains the same. It does not change its original form. I would love to have a touchstone. I'm not going to tell the story about Sanatana Goswami and the touchstone tonight. Prakritya vastute yadi achincha shakti haya. Ishvarera achincha shakti ite ki vismaya. If there is such inconceivable potency in material objects, why should we not believe in the inconceivable potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Purport, the argument of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described in this verse can be very easily understood even by a common man. If he simply thinks of the activities of the sun, which has been giving off unlimited amounts of heat and light since time immemorial, and yet has not even slightly decreased in power. Modern science believes that it is by sunshine that the entire cosmic manifestation is maintained. And actually, one can see how the actions and reactions of sunshine maintain order throughout the universe. The growth of vegetables and even the rotation of the planets takes place due to the heat and light of the sun, and gravity, of course. Sometimes, therefore, modern scientists consider the sun to be the original cause of creation, not knowing that the sun is only a medium, for it is also created by the supreme energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Aside from the sun and the touchstone, there are many other material things that transform their energy in different ways, and yet remain as they are. It is not necessary, therefore, for the original cause of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to change due to the changes and transformations of his different energies. Another example of Prabhupada sometimes gives is that people have children. You can have a child, let's say someone has a child who grows up, weighs 180 pounds. That doesn't mean that you are lighter by 180 pounds, although you may like to be if you happen to be horizontally challenged. Still, you maintain your weight at whatever your weight is. The falsity of Sripad Shankaracharya's explanation of Vivartavad and Padinambad has been detected by the Vaishnavacharyas, especially Jiva Goswami, whose opinion is that Shankaracharya did not understand the Vedanta Sutra. In Shankaracharya's explanation of one sutra, Ananda Mayo Vyasat, he has interpreted the affix Mayat with such word juggery that this very explanation proves that he had little knowledge of Vedanta Sutra, but simply wanted to support his impersonalism through the aphorisms of the Vedanta philosophy. Actually, however, he failed to do so because he could not put forward strong arguments. In this connection, Srila Jiva Goswami cites the phrase Brahma Pucham Patishta, that's from the Taittiriya Upanishad 2.5, which gives Vedic evidence that Brahman is the origin of everything. In explaining this verse, Sripad Shankaracharya interpreted various Sanskrit words in such a way that he implied, according to Srila Jiva Goswami, that Vyasadeva had very little knowledge of higher logic. Such unscrupulous deviation from the real meaning of the Vedanta Sutra has created a class of men who, by word jugglery, try to derive various indirect meanings from the Vedic literatures, especially the Bhagavad Gita. One of them has even explained that the word Kurukshetra refers to the body. Such interpretations imply, however, that neither Lord Krishna nor Vyasadeva had proper sense of the word usage or etymological adjustment. That means the meaning of the word. They lead one to assume that since Lord Krishna could not personally sense the meaning of what he was speaking and Vyasadeva did not know the meaning of what he was writing, Lord Krishna left his book to be explained later by the Mayavadis. Such interpretations merely prove, however, that their proponents have very little philosophical sense, and I would add very little common sense, that they're picking up Lord Krishna's book, accepting his authority, and at the same time, Lord Krishna could not personally sense the meaning of what he was speaking, which is ridiculous. And they're still accepting his authority. I mean, I can understand if I write a book and they say, well, but Krishna Maharaj didn't understand the nature of what he was saying in his book. Yeah, I could deal with that one. But if Krishna speaks and they say Krishna didn't really know the meaning of what he was saying, and yesterday didn't know the meaning of what he was writing, I mean, it's so insane. Then why accept that book as authoritative if you have that understanding? Just make your own book, as Prabhupada said. Don't use the Bhagavad Gita. Instead of wasting one's time falsely deriving such indirect meanings from the Vedanta Sutra and other Vedic literatures, one should accept the words of these books as they are, and presenting Bhagavad Gita as it is, therefore, we have not changed the meaning of the original words. Similarly, if one studies the Vedanta Sutra as it is without whimsical and capricious adulteration, it means whimsical, basically, one can understand the Vedanta Sutra very easily. Srila Vyasadeva therefore explains the Vedanta Sutra beginning from the first sutra, Janmadyasya Yataha, the absolute truth is that from which everything comes, which is also the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Janmadyasya Yato Anvayaditarathash Charateshva Vigya Swarat. I meditate, that's from the first verse of the Bhagavatam, I meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, the transcendent reality, who is the primeval cause of all causes, from whom all manifested universes arise, in whom they dwell, and by whom they are destroyed. I meditate upon that eternally effulgent Lord, who is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and yet is fully independent. The Supreme Personality of Godhead knows very well how to do everything perfectly. He is abhidya, always fully conscious. The Lord therefore says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 7th chapter, text 26, that he knows everything past, present, and future, but that no one but a devotee knows him as he is. Therefore, the absolute truth, the personality of God, is at least partially understood by devotees of the Lord, but the Mayavadi philosophers, who unnecessarily speculate to understand the absolute truth, simply waste their time. So after that word of vidya is swarat. He's also independent. He doesn't need anyone else. He can do everything by himself. In fact, he's perfect and complete, as the Upanishad tells us. Pranava se Mahavakya. Vedera Nidana. Ishvara Surupa Pranava Sarva Vishwa Dharma. Sorry, Dharma. The Vedic sound vibration, Omkara, the principal word in the Vedic literatures, is the basis of all Vedic vibrations. Therefore, one should accept Omkara as the sound representation of the Supreme Personality of God in the reservoir of the cosmic manifestation. Also in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's Pranava, Sarva Vedeshu, Shabdake Purusham Nushu. That I am the Om in the Vedic literatures. Om. And traditionally, only those who were Brahmins were allowed to chant Om. Or could get benefit from chanting Om. Or can chant the Gayatri mantras. Now, of course, you find so many people chanting Gayatri. But you have to be initiated by the proper person. You can't just, like, as some people do, sing the Gayatri mantra, the Brahma Gayatri, in kirtan. It's not bona fide. And it will not help you. In the Bhagavad Gita, 8th chapter, text 13, the glories of Omkara are described as follows. Om ityakaksharam brahma vyaharan mam Anusmaranyak prayati chajandeham sayati paramangatim. This verse indicates that Omkara, or Pranava, is a direct representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, at the time of death, one simply remembers Omkara. He remembers the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is therefore immediately transferred to the spiritual world. So, no more chanting Hare Krishna for me. I am just going to own my way back to Godhead. No. There's several problems with that particular proposal. First of all, we are chanting Hare Krishna to evoke the mercy of Srimati Radharani. Hare, Radharani in the Bhakti form. Also, we understand Omkara is Radhan Krishna, the living entity, as analyzed by the Acharyas. But, here's the big but, the authorized process for chanting, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And that's what we've been initiated in chanting. We may chant the Omkara and other mantras, but following the order of the spiritual master in disciplic succession is essential to perfect one's chanting. So if one chants something, even if it's a bona fide mantra, and doesn't chant what one has been ordered to chant by the spiritual master, one will not achieve perfection. I can just, you know, just like Gauranga Valite Havi Pulaka Sharira. So what I can do is just chant Gauranga, 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 Gauranga. That's spiritual. But why won't I go back to Godhead? Because that's not Prabhupada's instruction. Because if you want to chant properly, you have to follow the order of the spiritual master and chant the way the spiritual master taught you. There's many bona fide mantras, and if you haven't been initiated to chant a mantra a particular way, don't waste your time. For example, we may chant different Kavacha mantras and everything like that. That's all right. But you have to chant what your spiritual master told you to chant. Whether you like it or not, and you better like it, because Kalo Nishteva 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 Gataranyata. Omkara is the basic principle of all Vedic mantras, for it is a representation of Lord Krishna, understanding of whom is the ultimate goal of the Vedas, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Vedais Chasa Sarvaya Aham Ibavedyaha. It's 15:15 in the Gita. Mayavadi philosophers cannot understand these simple facts explained in the Bhagavad Gita, and yet they are very proud of being Vedantis. Sometimes, therefore, we refer, this is a very funny expression by Prabhupada, we refer to the Vedanti philosophers as Vedantis. You know, he's just changing some of the pronunciation here. And one of the letters and the pronunciation of the I's in Vedanti, Vedanti, Vedantis, which means those who have no teeth. V means without, and danti means possessing teeth. Sometimes you get by this toothpaste in India, it's called Vajra Danta, Danti, or something like that, which means you have lightning teeth. I remember there's a toothpaste like that. The statement, so not Vedanti, we like to take their teeth out. The statements of the Shankara philosophy, which are the teeth of the Mayavadi philosopher, are always broken by the strong arguments by Vaishnava philosophers. Sorry, I'm starting to laugh. Such as the great Acharyas, especially Ramanujacharya, Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya break the teeth of the Mayavadi philosophers, who can therefore be called Vedantis, toothless, as mentioned in the... Now, okay, let me go back a little bit. So why is Prabhupada taking this pugilistic... Okay, here's a word for you, pugilistic. Pugilistic stance against these innocent, misled people. Why is Prabhupada doing that? It's a good question. These poor, innocent, misled people. And these innocent, misled people. Is the microphone still working? Good. So these innocent, misled people, they're just like not going back to Godhead. So why would Prabhupada, do such a thing? I'm going to answer it first. First of all, because these people are misleading others. Number one. Number two, they are envious. People don't come up with this nonsense philosophy unless they have a desire. As we mentioned yesterday, if one has a desire for something, Krishna gives you the intelligence. So their desire is to cheat Krishna. It's not that, they just have this Mayavad philosophy. Oh, no, they wanted it. They wanted it. Their envy. Just like if one has an emotional problem, then they come up with a philosophy to justify that emotional problem. I'll give you an example. I hope it's not offending anybody. Sometimes people use different quotes from the Vedic literatures or so-called history or Indian culture, whatever, to come up with a philosophy of chauvinism. What is chauvinism? Chauvinism is basically, we're the men and we couldn't be prouder, and if the women don't like it, they better just go into the kitchen. They just better go in the kitchen and cook. Because that's what you're supposed to do, ladies. So that's basically chauvinism in a nutshell. So anyway, so people have an emotional issue. And so then they pick and choose different points out of context in the Vedic literatures or in some history or even in the history of the Muslim-influenced culture. And they prove it. And that's why they come up with a philosophy. Not because of the philosophy. People do not have philosophies. Try to remember that. People do not have philosophies because they're philosophical. People have philosophies because they are emotional. How many times do I have to explain that? People espouse a particular philosophy, believe in a particular philosophy, because of their psychology. Right? I mean, there may be some exceptions, like someone who sees God, someone who comes in contact with Prabhupada and get enlightened, yeah. But 99% of the people, because we deal with this all the time. In the political sphere, whether you're talking about, American politics or Indian politics or Russian politics, and then in the religious sphere, you always find people who have a conservative slant, an orthodox slant, a reform slant. Sorry, wrong religion here. You'll always find people who have different slants on the same literature. What is that saying? You read the Bible and something like that. You see black and I see white, We read the Bible day and night. I see black, you see white. Anyway, forget the exact quote. It's not important. So the point is, it's our emotions, our coverings, our biases, our upadis that have us come out with different takes on the philosophy or on the application of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So if someone happens to be against, let's say someone happens to be against women, they're chauvinistic, sorry about this, then there's some psychological reason for it. They're just like macho. I don't know if you know what macho is. And if someone is really interested a lot in let's say equality, then they're intelligent. No. There's also a psychological reason. I mean, sometimes people ask me, why Are you so egalitarian? I am egalitarian. So why, if you don't know what egalitarian is, look it up later. I'm not your Oxford Dictionary. Why are you so egalitarian? Why? Because emotionally, when I'm talking to or referring to certain people, I put myself in their shoes or their sandals. And I'm trying to see how would I feel if I were in their particular situation. That's fine. So that, you know, there's a emotional, psychological reason why I'm right. Anyways. So if you all don't understand what I'm saying, that's okay. Ask your mothers later on. So as I mentioned above, the transcendental vibration, Omkar, is explained in the Bhagavad Gita. We are chapter 8, verse 13. Actually, we read this. We read it before. We can read it again. Om Get Aksharam Brahma Vyaharan Mam Anusmaran Yapriyati Chajan Deham Siyati Paramam Gatim. After being situated in the yoga practice and vibrating the sacred syllable Om, the supreme combination of letters of one thinks of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and quits his body, he will certainly reach the spiritual planets. Also, he has to think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Oh, yeah. Actually, I forgot. So why is Prabhupada so heavy about these things? Well, because these people are envious. I explained that. But also because his spiritual master was heavy about these things. Because these people are impeding or spreading atheism, destroying people's spiritual lives. If one actually understands that Omkar is the sound representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whether he chants Omkar or Hare Krishna mantra, the result will certainly be the same. But he has to follow the order of the spiritual master. The transcendental vibration of Omkar is further explained in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, verse 17. Pitahamasya jagato mahatta data pitamaha vejam pavitam omkara riksama yajureva cha. I am the father of the universe, the mother. This is Krishna speaking, not me. The support in the grandsire. I am the object of knowledge, the purifier in the syllable om. I am the rig, the sama, and the yajurveda. Similarly, the transcendental om is further explained in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 17, verse 23. Om tat sad iti nirvesho brahmanas trivadas mritaha brahmanas tena vedascha skityascha vita pura. From the beginning of creation, the three syllables, om, om, tat, sat, have been used to indicate the supreme absolute truth, Brahman. They were uttered by brahmanas while chanting the Vedic hymns and during sacrifice for the satisfaction of the supreme. Throughout all the Vedic literatures, the glories of Omkara are specifically mentioned. Srila Jiva Goswami, in his thesis, Bhagavad Sandarbha, says that in the Vedic literature, Omkara is considered to be the sound vibration of the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Only this vibration of transcendental sound can deliver a conditioned soul from the clutches of Maya, illusion, Vivarta. Sometimes Omkara is also called the deliverer, Tara. Srimad Bhagavatam begins with the Omkara vibration. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Therefore, Omkara has been described by the great commentator Siddhashami as Tarankura, the seat of deliverance from the material world. Since the Supreme Godhead is absolute, his holy name and the sound vibration Omkara is as good as he himself, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that the holy name or Omkara, the transcendental representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has all the potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. From the Shikshashika. Nanamakari Bahuda Nijasarva Shakti Stitrapita Nirmatas Madanena Kala. All potencies are invested in the holy vibration of the holy name of the Lord. There's no doubt that the holy name of the Lord or Omkara, the Supreme Personality, is the Supreme Personality of God himself. In other words, anyone who chants Omkara in the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna, immediately meets the Supreme Lord directly in his sound form. In the Narada Pancharatra, it is clearly said that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, personally appears before the chanter, who engages in chanting the Ashtakshara, or eight-syllable mantra, Om Namo Narayanaya. A similar statement in the Mandukya Upanishad declares that whatever one sees in the spiritual world is all an expansion of the spiritual potency of Omkara. On the basis of all the Upanishads, Srila Jiva Goswami says that Omkara is the supreme absolute truth and is accepted as such by all the acharyas and authorities. Omkara is beginningless, chainless, changeless, supreme and free from deterioration and external contamination. Omkara is the origin, middle, and end of everything, and any living entity who thus understands Omkara attains the perfection of spiritual identity in Omkara. Omkara, being situated in everyone's heart, is Ishvara, the supreme personality of Godhead, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Ishvara sarvabhutanam rideshe arjuna tishtati. It means the supreme personality of God is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna. Brahmayan sarvabhutani yantra bhutani maya. That's the rest of the verse, that the living entities are wandering in this machine made of the material. Let me just change my microphone before the battery goes out. They're wandering. Okay. Hare Krishna. That's good. All right. Let me just turn it off. Give me 1 second. Give me 1 second there. That's better. Let me just turn the volume up so it in your audio settings. Take 1 second to normalize the volume. They're wandering. Yeah, that's it. Oh, right, gang. Omkara is as good as Vishnu because Omkara is as all-pervasive as Vishnu. One who knows Omkara and Lord Vishnu to be identical no longer has to lament or hanker. One who chants Omkara, wow, here's a quote. I should refer this to the hermeneutics community. One who chants Omkara no longer remains a sudra, but immediately comes to the position of a brahmana. Wow, that is far out. I got to save that quote. Hold on a second. Give me a second, Prabhus and Prabhis. That is an amazing quote. Oh my God. Let me, that was a quote I was looking for. Give me a second. I got to save the location too. Okay, got it, Prabhus, Prabhis, and once again, I gotta move this thing back. Okay, one who chants Omkara no longer remains a Shudra, but immediately comes to the position of a Brahmana. Let me just send that to someone. All right, simply by chanting Omkara. Hold on a second, I got a page down here. Okay. Simply by chanting Omkara, one can understand, the energy of the Supreme Lord, Idami Vishwam Bhagavan, Ivetra, Yato Jagatstana, he wrote the Sambhavat. The Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, is himself this cosmos, and still he is aloof from it. From him only this cosmic manifestation is emanated, in him it rests, and unto him it enters after annihilation. Annihilation is destruction, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.20. Although one who does not understand concludes otherwise, Srimad Bhagavatam states that the entire cosmic manifestation is but an expansion excuse me, of the energy of the Supreme Lord. Realization of this is possible simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord, Omkara. One should not, however, foolishly conclude that because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is omnipotent, we have manufactured a combination of letters A, U, and M to represent him. Factually, the transcendental sound Omkara, although a combination of the three letters A, U, M has the transcendental potency, one who chants Omkara will very soon realize Omkara and Lord Vishnu to be non-different. Krishna declares, Pranavas Sarva Vedeshu, I quoted that before, I'm the syllable Om in the Vedic mantras, Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter, text 8. One should therefore conclude that among the many incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Omkara is the sound incarnation. All the Vedas accept this thesis. One should always remember that the holy name of the Lord himself, are always identical. Abhinav Phuong, Namanaman Naho, Chitan Charitamrita, Majalila, 17th chapter, text 133. Since Omkara is the basic principle of all Vedic knowledge, it is uttered before one begins to chant any Vedic hymn. Without Omkara, no Vedic mantra is successful. The Goswamis therefore declare that Pranava Omkara is the complete representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they have analyzed Omkara in terms of its alphabetical constituents as follows. Ah, Kareno Chate Krishna Sarva Lokai Ganai Kaha U Kareno Chate Radha Makaro Jiva Vachakaha. Omkara is a combination of the letters AUM. A Kareno Chate Krishna. The letter A, Akara, refers to Krishna, who is Sarva Lokaika Nayaka, the master of all living entities and planets, material and spiritual. Nayaka means leader. He's the supreme leader. Nitya Nichanam Chaitanas Chaitanam Kato Upanishad 2.2.13. The letter U, Ukara, indicates Shrimati Radharani, the pleasure potency of Krishna. And M, Ma Kara, indicates the living entities Jiva. Thus, Om is the complete combination of Krishna, his potency, and his eternal servitors. In other words, Omkara represents Krishna, his name, fame, pastimes, entourage, expansions, devotees, potencies, and everything else all pertaining to him, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu states in the present verse of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sarva Vishva Dhamma, Omkara is the resting place of everything, just as Krishna is the resting place of everything, Brahmano Vipratishtaham. That verse means Krishna's the source of the Brahman. That's from the Gita. The Mayavadi philosophers consider many Vedic mantras to be the Mahavakya or principal Vedic mantras, such as Tatvamasi, which means you are, that is. That's from Chandogya Upanishad 6.8.7, Idam Sarvam Yad, Ayam Atma, and Brahmeidam Sarvam. That's from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 2.5.1, Atmayavadam Sarvam, Chandogya Upanishad 7.25.2, and Neha Na. Nashti Akinchana from the Katha Upanishad 2.1.11. That is a great mistake. Only Omkara is the Mahavakya. All these other mantras that the Mayavadis accept as the Mahavakya, it means great speech, are only incidental. They cannot be taken as the Mahavakya or Mahamantra. The mantra Tatvamasi indicates only a partial understanding of the Vedas, like Omkara, unlike Omkara, which represents the full understanding of the Vedas. Therefore, the transcendental sound that includes all Vedic knowledge is Omkara. Aside from Omkara, none of the words uttered by the followers of Shankaracharya can be considered the Mahavakya. They are merely passing remarks. Shankaracharya, however, has never stressed chanting of the Mahavakya Omkara. He's accepted only Tatvamasi as the Mahavakya. Imagining the living entity to be God, he has misrepresented all the mantras of the Vedanta Sutra with the motive of proving that there is no separate existence in living entities and the Supreme Absolute Truth. This is similar to the politician's attempt to prove nonviolence from the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is violent to demons, and to attempt to prove that Krishna is not violent is ultimately to deny Krishna. As such explanations of the Bhagavad Gita are absurd, so also is Shankaracharya's explanation of the Vedanta Sutra, and no sane and reasonable man will accept it. At present, however, the Vedanta Sutra is misrepresented not only by the so-called Vedantis, but also by other unscrupulous persons who were so degraded that even recommend that sannyasis eat meat, fish, and eggs. Of course, that's Ramakrishna Mission, and Vivekananda. In this way, the so-called followers of Shankara, Ramakrishna Mission is sometimes called the chicken mission because they eat chicken. Anyway, they ate something else, which I'm not even going to describe, which Prabhupada mentioned. The impersonalist Maya bodies are sinking lower and lower. Actually, beef one time. How could, not on a general basis, but he did. How these degraded men explain the Vedanta Sutra was the essence of all Vedic literature. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has declared Mayavadi Vasha Shune Hoya Savarnash. Chaitanya Mat Charitamrita Majalila 6169. Anyone who hears commentary on the Vedanta Sutra from the Mayavad school is completely doomed, as explained in the Bhagavad Gita 15:15. We'll have to stop in a second. Vedai Shasabe Rahameva Vedo. All Vedic literature's aims at understanding Krishna. Let me just see how much more there is in the purport here. Oh, we can end the purport. So, Mayavad philosophy, however, has deviated everyone from Krishna. Therefore, there's a great need for the Krishna conscious movement all over the world to save the world from degradation. Every intelligent and sane man and woman must abandon the philosophical explanation of the Mayavadis and accept the explanation of Vedanta, Vaishnava Acharyas. One should read Bhagavad Gita as it is to try to understand the real purport of the Vedas. And so that's tomorrow. We start with 129. Okay, got it. Okay, so we got a few minutes for questions. Questions, answers, challenges, problems. Actually, it was nice. Yeah, I want to tell a story about Omkara. Once upon a time, there was an Omkara. Now, here's the story about Omkara. That before I joined the movement, if I joined, but before I put on a dhoti, that's accurate. Before I put on a dhoti, before I started chanting Hare Krishna, I chanted Om. I would go to the forest for hours and hours and just Om my day away. Just Om, Om, you know, really prolong the Om. Om. I can go longer if you like. But anyway, I would chant that, and for hours I would sit there. And the animals would come up, all the tigers and the lions and the bears and the cockroaches. No, there were no tigers and lions. There were cockroaches. Anyway, there were all the animals would come up. All right. Let's not be too romantic. Squirrels. All the squirrels would come up and they would sit around me, listening to me chant Om. I had my disciples. These are my first disciples. You know, so. And then one time I went to Florida where there was a swamp. And I drained the swamp. That's an inside joke. As if Americans wouldn't know what I'm talking. Unless you're an American, you wouldn't know what I'm talking about. Anyway, yeah, it was actually in Florida, and I was chanting, and it was a swampy area, and there were alligators there. So that's a fact. It's not just a joke. So anyway, and actually, you know, another thing is when we first met Prabhupada, we went swimming with alligators to get lotus flowers from Prabhupada, because there was this one pond in Gainesville, Florida, where we first saw Prabhupada, is called Lake Alice, and it's filled with alligators. But we had so much faith that Prabhupada wanted lotus flowers, and this was the place where you get the lotus flowers. We went in there, and these alligators were right next to us, seriously. And Krishna protected us because we chanted Om. Oh, we chanted Hare Krishna at that time.
Uh-oh, so, that's dangerous.
Dangerous? For no. We have to mute her. So anyway, so Any questions about chanting Om? So Om, in one sense, Om brought me to the Krishna Conscious Movement. By the mercy of Om. No, I was Prabhupada, actually. Otherwise, I would have never been here. So questions? I think no one else has a question. No one has a question. Oh, my God.
I have one.
Prangovinda has a question. Oh, my God. Yeah. It's all right, Mr. Pran.
Please accept my humble obeisances, all goes to Prabhupada.
Okay. What would you do if I didn't accept your humble obeisances? Anyway, so
I'll cry.
You cry, all right. So, all right, so what's the question?
Maharaj, it seems like the meaning of the word Namnam Akari Bahuda Nija Sarva Sakti.
That's right. You got
so on the absolute platform, the name and the person and the Leela all are on absolute platform and it's all complete eternally.
Yeah.
So Nama. Why does it say
Rupa Leela, Namaguna Rupa Leela, Namaguna Rupa Leela? Alright. So what? What's the question?
So why it says that Lord invested all his potency in the name. The name itself is absolute, same as God. Why?
Yeah, the name is the same as the Lord. So his potency is, well, it's not that he actually invested at a certain time. We're thinking in terms of time. It's a manner of expression. It's not that one day Krishna said, you know, I'm going to put my potency in my name. But actually, here's another meaning of the word invested. The Lord invests the potency in the name when it comes down through the cyclic succession. Because the chanting of the holy name is not simply the movement of the lips and the tongue. It actually has to descend. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the potency, yeah, it's Namabhas, but it's not Shudanam. If you want the complete potency, then you have to actually accept the name in disciplic succession. Sampradaya Vinaya Mantras Te Nishpalamataha. Just like I was chanting Om, and that was, I guess it was like Namabhas, because I didn't know what it was. And I wasn't initiated in the chanting of Om, but because Om itself is a transcendental sound. But for the full potency to be invested, one has to receive it in disciplic succession. So, hey, anyway, that's a cool way of answering your question.
Well, I have one more in that relation.
Yes.
So now there is a distinction between primary name and secondary name.
That's right.
So when we say Paramatma, it does not have a relationship according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So it's secondary name.
That's
so
right.
Does it mean all the potency is not intact?
The potency is in the primary names. The full potency is in the primary names.
So you are making distinction.
That's right. The full potency to take you back to Goloka Vrindavan. Yes, there is potency, the potency of God. But every name has a specific potency. Like if you say Vishnu, chanting the name Vishnu does not have the potency to take you back to Krishna Loka. Even though Vishnu is the same as Krishna, every name manifests, or let's say every name has the full potency, but it doesn't manifest to you as a full potency. How about that?
That sounds good, but how do you answer then the Raslila, essence of Raslila last verse? It says, Bikriditam Brajavadubi Idam Cha Vishnu.
Yeah.
So that Vishnu, who is having a sporting pastime with those coward damsels.
That's right, because then Vishnu is taken as a category. Just like you have Vishnu Tattva, and that's the category of God.
But no Vishnu plays with the gopis.
No.
In one sense.
No, but gopis are not interested. Gopis are not interested in Vishnu, but they're interested in Krishna, who is of the Vishnu Tattva category. I hope you understand what I just said.
Yes. But then why should
like,
the
sometimes we say the gopis dance with God. We understand that we mean under the broad heading of God, there's many different, let's say, expansion to 18 chunks of Kalak Purumsa, Krishna's Du Bhagavan, but Krishna's the original. So the way, sometimes Vishnu is used as indicating God, and sometimes it's used to indicate a specific expansion of Krishna. Does that make sense?
Yeah, this is wonderful. You actually opened the door of another sloka, because Ras Lila began with the first sloka. Sukhdev Goswami says Bhagavan upi tarati. He didn't say even Krishna or anyone. He says Bhagavan. Yeah. So it makes sense, Maharaj. This is wonderful. Very good.
Yeah, because Bhagavan is a generic name for God, and can include Krishna or any of his expansions. But Bhagavan in that particular case also means the personality was full of all opulences, and Krishna is the most. Krishna is the most Bhagavan because he has the most of. Krishna exhibits the greatest beauty of all the incarnations. So if you have to say Bhagavan Uttama, the topmost Bhagavan is, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swami. That nutshell verse. Ete chansa kalak pumsa, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. So here Krishna is described as Bhagavan in that verse, but he's Bhagavan Swayam. Because the six qualities of Bhagavan elaborated but Parashara Muni are exhibited to the highest degree in Krishna. Krishna has much greater beauty than Vishnu, right?
Yes.
Krishna Krishna is much more renounced than Vishnu. Does Vishnu ever take sannyas?
Nope.
But Krishna in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, not only did he take sannyas, but even Krishna, when he appeared as Krishna, he left the gopis. I mean, can you imagine, of course you want to take sannyas someday, so I can't use a household example. Let's say some really romantic man, macho man, something like that. He has all these girls who are madly in love with him, 16-year-old girls who are like, after 16, ugliness sets in. It's all downhill from there. It's all downhill. It's like the girl starts to look like her mother after 16. So anyway, so... One time, I'll tell you a funny story. One time a man came to the temple and he brought his wife with him. And she looked older. And I said, so-and-so, it's really nice you brought your mother to the temple. That was almost my disappearance day.
Was it okay, Maharaj?
Was it all right? No, she said, thank you, Maharaj. I said, oh, and I ran away as fast as my legs could carry me. So let's get on with the example. Let's say there was some really macho man. He had these beautiful girls like surrounded like a harem of beautiful girls ready to do anything he wanted. And then he just left because he had to kill his uncle. Krishna could have had his uncle killed by someone else, right?
Yes, that's,
if you think about renunciation, I mean, that is really renounced as far as someone in the material world. Like Prabhupada said to one sannyasi who was complaining about the householders, he said, you're just saying this because nobody would have you. Sannyasi, because the sannyasi was criticizing Shakshi, a younger Brahmin in the Shakshi Gopal story. Anyway, so the point is that's renunciation. Wow. I mean, I don't see that Vishnu is so renounced as Krishna was. Actually, there's that story that one time Lakshmi left Vishnu, and he wasn't renounced. He came down to the earth looking for her. He was feeling really bad because he didn't have any money. You know that story?
Yeah, in Jagannath story I read.
No, that's South Indian. That's the Tirupati story. Also, he came down looking for Lakshmi, and finally he found Maya Lakshmi, which is Bhumi, and he got married to her, and then the real Lakshmi, and then he got in trouble. So Vishnu wasn't too renounced. He needed Lakshmi. But could you imagine Krishna leaving Vrindavan like that? I mean, I know there's esoteric reasons, and the gopis are never separated from Krishna, and Krishna's never separated from the gopis, and the Viparlamba Seva, I know all that stuff. And so that's renunciation. So Krishna, the point I'm making is Krishna shows the greatest renunciation, the greatest beauty, the greatest strength, the greatest, you know, fame, all these greatest everything, greatest intelligence. And Krishna showed so much beauty that Vishnu had to make a trick. The Mahavishnu had to make a trick to see Krishna. You know, he couldn't be satisfied by looking at himself in the mirror. So he had to come and make a trick to see Krishna. Anyway, all right, enough.
I like the way you explain, Maharaj. It's wonderful.
Thank you. At least I have someone who appreciates me.
No, it's true. I'm sure everybody appreciates it. They just don't say.
Everybody, you have not seen the flaming text messages I get every day. Everyone appreciates.
Maharaj, how is your vaccine? Your health is okay with the vaccination?
Yeah, my health is all right. I haven't died yet. Everyone appreciates me. One day, I will get 2 chamara whisks and have people fanning me all day long, like in the Hindi movies. I have 2 ladies by my side fanning me. I'll get a lion's throne and sit on the lion's throne, singhasana. My ego will become bigger and bigger. Like Dr. Frog. All right, so thank you very much. So on that happy note, we'll see everybody tomorrow evening, same time, same station.
Thank you.